It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. Mark Livonier, your host for an hour of Westerns. Later on, James Stewart is the Six Shooter, but right now, John Daner stars as Paladin on Have Gun, Will Travel. This CBS episode called When in Rome, from October 25th, 1959.
If you kill me because of the mistake I made, it won't save your husband's life.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875, the Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Oh, Mr. Paladin.
Well, Mrs. Temple and Mr. Temple, how are you this morning?
Won't you join us for breakfast, Mr. Paladin? We'd sure like to have your company.
Well, all right. Very kind of you. I don't enjoy eating alone either. Oh, I thought you two were leaving last night.
William never showed up. I can't imagine our son-in-law leaving us here, waiting. I just know something's wrong.
Now, Dora, there's no use fretting. I told you there must have been a mix-up in the dates. Either that or Imogene hasn't gotten your letter yet.
But I wrote her 4 weeks before we left.
Where does your daughter live?
Oh, she and her husband have a farm near San Jose.
Oh, Charlie, the desk clerk said they call it San Jose.
Well, Mr. Paladin knows where I mean.
Well, if you sent a letter from Ohio 4 weeks before you left, she would have gotten it by now.
That's what I think. I told Imogene that the train would arrive on the 15th and we would come to the Carlton Hotel and wait for William to pick us up, just like she asked us to. Well, we got here on the 15th, and that was 2 days ago.
Oh, Mr. Paladin! Mr. Paladin!
Yes, over here, hey boy.
Oh, they told me you were in here, but I didn't see you at your table.
Yes, well, Mr. and Mrs. Temple asked me to join them.
Oh, very good. Telegram come for you, Mr. Paladin.
Oh, thank you. Would you excuse me,
please? Oh, yes, of course.
Go right ahead.
You want me to send an answer, Mr. Paladin?
Yes, the usual reply, hey boy, and I'll be leaving on the afternoon stage.
Yes, sir.
Oh, dear me, I do hate telegrams. I hope that wasn't bad news, Mr. Paladin.
Oh, no, just a business matter. By coincidence, I'll be going to San Jose myself today.
Dora? Maybe we ought to go on that stage, too, with Mr. Paladin.
But what about William? He comes here and finds us gone.
Well, we can leave a message for him with the desk clerk.
I am anxious to see Imogene.
And as long as Mr. Paladin will be on the same stage, would you mind, Mr. Paladin?
Oh, none at all. As a matter of fact, I'd enjoy your company.
Dora?
Well, all right. If William isn't here by the time the stage leaves, we'll go with Mr. Paladin.
The telegram was from Sheriff Donovan in Salinas. It briefly stated, "The professor escaped, headed toward San Jose. $1,000 reward. Are you interested?" I was interested. A month before, the man they called the professor had killed an old friend of mine during a bank holdup in Salinas. Sheriff Donovan had captured him and was holding him for trial. Now, somehow, he had escaped. I had never seen the professor, but he was well known throughout the state as a daring hold-up man who always worked alone, and his ruthlessness was camouflaged by a suave appearance and polite manners. Mr. and Mrs. Temple's son-in-law had not come for them at the hotel, so they accompanied me on the stage to San Jose. I knew that I would have to see them safely to their daughter's ranch before I could start my search for the professor.
You know, Mr. Paladin, I just can't get over how different you look.
No? How's that, ma'am?
Back at the hotel, you wore such fine clothes. But now, with that gun you're wearing, it's so frightening.
Now, Dora.
Well, when a man is away from the city, Mrs. Temple, he sometimes changes.
Why?
Oh, there's some mighty greedy men around these parts. But I'm sure you and Mr. Temple will never be bothered by people like that.
I should hope not.
What kind of business are you in, Mr. Paladin?
Well, I have a card. Here. Perhaps this will explain.
Hmm. Oh, yes, I see.
Let me see that, Charlie. Have gun, will travel. You just don't look like the same person we knew back at the hotel.
Why are we stopping?
Now, this is Midway Station. The driver will get some fresh horses here. It'll give us a chance to stretch our legs.
Oh, that's good.
You folks can get out now and rest a spell.
Yeah. How long will we be here?
About 20 minutes.
Charlie, Mr. Paladin must be one of those gunfighters.
Shh. May I help you down, Mrs. Temple?
Oh, why, yes. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mr. Temple?
I guess I can make it all right. I ain't that old yet.
Oh, Charlie, look at that sunset. We've never seen anything like that back in Ohio.
Oh, my. Yes, that is pretty.
Just go on inside if you like. Mr. Braley will have some coffee for you.
Oh, that's just what I need.
I have to take the horses out back.
How much further is it to San Jose, Mr. Paladin?
About 10 miles.
Howdy. Come in and make yourselves at home.
Oh, my. Nice and warm in here.
Just the three of you on the stage?
That's right.
I'm Mr. Braley. Coffee pot's on the stove. I'll bring you some cups.
Someplace I can wash up around here?
Right through that door to the kitchen. You can't miss it.
I'm going to try to get some of this dust off me. Do you want to wash up, Dora?
No. You go ahead, Charlie.
All right. I'll be right back.
I hope I haven't said anything unflattering toward you, Mr. Paladin.
Huh. About the gun?
Yes.
Oh, no.
I just don't understand why a man would have to wear a gun.
Here you are, folks. Just help yourself to the coffee.
Thank you.
Mr. Braley, do you stay out here in this desolate place all alone?
Why, yes, ma'am. I have my own living quarters right here. People come through twice or maybe three times a day. Always seeing new faces. And they don't stay more than 20 minutes or so. It's right pleasant. Howdy.
How do you do?
Something I can do for you, mister?
I was looking for the stage driver.
Well, he's out back with the horses. The stage is going to San Jose. If you want a ticket, I can sell you one.
No, thank you. I'll be going in the other direction. Does this door lead to the back?
No, just to the kitchen. If you want to see the driver, you'll have to go out front and around.
No, that won't be necessary. Now that I have a good view of the front door, I can see him when he comes in.
Oh!
A few people will please put your hands above your heads.
He had a gun under his coat.
Do as he says, Mrs. Temple.
You're a very sensible man, sir.
And would I be correct in assuming that you are the man they call the professor?
Quite correct.
The professor?
Who's he?
He's one of those men I was telling you about earlier, Mrs. Temple. He makes his living by thieving and killing.
That was a very harsh statement, sir.
Well, what are you going to do with us?
I assure you, madam, I have no intention of hurting you or either one of these gentlemen. I only want your money or any other valuables you might have on you. And I'll also take the agent's cash box, and then I will leave quietly.
Dora, I...
Charlie!
Mr. Temple, get back in!
You tricked me.
Don't you do it, Professor.
No.
Mr. Temple. Mr. Temple.
Is he?
No. The bullet hit his shoulder, but I think the fall did more damage than the bullet.
The professor is dead.
Braley, we'll have to get a doctor for Mr. Temple.
About 5 miles the nearest doctor.
Well, can you bring him here?
Why, sure. You can put Mr. Temple in my bed. It's in that room. I'll be back as soon as I can. Yeah, it was pretty fancy shooting, mister.
Mr. Paladin, you shot my husband.
I know, Mrs. Temple. It was a mistake.
Mistake?
I didn't mean to, Mrs. Temple. I'm sorry. I was trying to save his life as well as ours.
That man wasn't going to shoot us. He said he wasn't.
Mrs. Temple, he was going to shoot your husband. You saw that.
No, I didn't see it. If you hadn't pulled that gun out, I don't think you would have tried to kill any of us. I believe that. You're one of those gunfighters we've heard about. You're a killer.
stage driver agreed to take the professor's body into San Jose and tell the sheriff what had happened. I carried Mr. Temple to the bed and made him as comfortable as possible. He was still unconscious. Mrs. Temple and I kept a close watch over him as we waited for Brayley to return with the doctor. The one dim lantern in the room flickered over the still form of Charlie Temple lying in bed and his wife sitting in a chair beside him. As I paced the floor, I said a silent prayer for the life of this man who had been hit by a stray bullet from my gun.
Mr. Paladin.
Yes?
I was thinking about how pleasant it was back at that hotel in San Francisco. And how all of this wouldn't have happened if we hadn't come with you.
Yes, I know, Mrs. Temple. I was thinking about that, too.
You never know what a person is really like when you first meet them. You've got to wait until they show themselves for what they really are.
You're thinking about me?
Yes.
I'm sorry you feel that way. I've tried to explain.
Mr. Paladin, I want you to do something for me.
Yes, ma'am.
If Charlie dies, I want you to kill me.
Oh, you don't mean that.
But I do. I'll pay you.
I must be the most contemptible person you've ever known.
Charlie always said that we would live to be 90 years old. And when we had to leave this earth, we would go together. It's something we've felt, we've known for a long time. We'll always be together. We only have each other.
Will you have your daughter?
Oh, no, she doesn't need me. A daughter never belongs to her mother. Imogene has her own life to lead and her own family. It doesn't include her mother. She doesn't need me.
No, no. It isn't good to think this way, Mrs. Temple. You must think about your husband living, that he'll be all right.
He isn't breathing anymore.
You're wrong. He is breathing. He's still the same.
But it doesn't look like it.
I assure you he is. You're getting weary, Mrs. Temple. Why don't you step outside and get some fresh air?
No, I won't leave Charlie. You can't make me do that.
Well, I wouldn't try if you didn't want to. Could I get you a cup of coffee?
Oh, yes, thank you. I'd like some coffee.
Here you are. Mrs. Temple.
This rifle was hanging on the wall.
If you killed me, would it make you feel better?
Yes. Yes, it would.
Why?
Because you killed Charlie.
He isn't dead, Mrs. Temple.
You keep saying that, but it isn't true.
Why don't you see for yourself?
No, you're trying to fool me. If I turn away from you, you'd kill me.
I thought that's what you wanted me to do.
Dora.
Charlie?
Your husband is waking up, Mrs. Temple.
Oh, Charlie! Charlie!
He's back in the bedroom, Doc. Oh, Mr. Paladin, this here is Dr. Joven.
Doctor?
Mr. Paladin?
He was home having supper, but he came with me just as soon as I got there.
Is the man still unconscious?
No, I think he's coming out of it, but this has been quite a strain on Mrs. Temple. Maybe you can give her something to quiet her down.
I'll see what I can do.
I guess it's been pretty calm around here while I was gone, huh?
Yes. I suppose you could say that, Mr. Brayley. Before the doctor left, he assured me that Mr. Temple was going to be all right, and that Mrs. Temple was resting comfortably. He suggested that I wait until the next morning to continue our trip to their daughter's ranch.
Funny how, during all the excitement, I forgot to offer you something to eat.
I'm glad you remembered, Mr. Brayley.
Think we ought to ask the old lady if she wants some?
No. As long as she's resting, we might as well leave her alone. If she wakes up before we turn in, maybe she'll want to eat.
I want you to know that you're welcome to use my wagon in the morning to take them into San Jose.
That's mighty kind of you, Mr. Bailey. You've been very helpful.
Well, now, I wonder who that could be this time of night.
Hello, Mr. Bailey.
Oh, Sheriff. Come in. Miss Paladin, this is Sheriff Miller from San Jose.
Sheriff?
Miss Paladin, I'm glad to make your acquaintance. The stage driver told me what happened here this evening, and I came out to congratulate you.
For killing a man?
Yes, sir. That professor cut up quite a ruckus in our town the last 2 days. Killed 3 men. We're mighty grateful for what you did.
You came all the way out here to tell me that?
No, not exactly. The driver told me the Temples were here, and I came out to take him back to their daughter. How's the old man?
The doctor says he'll be all right, but we should wait until tomorrow morning to take him back.
Oh, I see. Where's Miss Temple?
Oh, she's in...
I'm right here, Sheriff. I heard you talking about my daughter.
Yes, ma'am. She asked me to come get you folks.
How is she?
Well, she was awful worried about you and Mr. Temple. She tried to get word to you up in San Francisco that she couldn't come after you. But they said you'd already left the hotel. She was waiting at the stage office for you, but, of course, you weren't on that stage when it come in.
Well, she knows we're here?
Yes, ma'am. The driver told her what happened. She wanted to come with me, but I wouldn't let her. Told her she'd best stay home with the kids.
Well, why didn't William come with you?
Well, I don't exactly know how to tell you this, Miss Temple. You sure you feel all right?
Yes. What's happened to William?
He was shot.
You're telling me he's dead. William's dead?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, Imogene. Oh.
It happened about a mile from his ranch yesterday. He was robbed and killed by that professor fella.
You mean the same man who was here?
Same one. But thanks to Mr. Paladin, he won't be killing anybody else. Ever.
Oh. Sheriff, will you take us to my daughter now? Tonight?
Why, yes, ma'am. If you think it'll be all right to move Mr. Temple.
No, he's much better. It'll be all right. Imogene needs us. My daughter needs me. Mr. Paladin.
Yes, ma'am.
I owe you an apology. I behaved rather foolishly.
Well, under the circumstances, Mrs. Temple, it was understandable.
Would you come with us? I want my daughter to meet the man who saved our lives and avenged her husband's death.
Hello, Miss Wong.
I'm so happy to see you back.
Oh, it's good to be home.
Oh, did you see morning paper?
No, but the hay boy was trying to tell me something about it when I met him downstairs.
Oh, you big hero.
Oh.
The paper say you shoot down notorious killer.
Ah.
Ah.
Well, I guess a lot of people are glad the professor won't be around to threaten them anymore.
Oh, yes, what do you do with all that money, Miss Paladin?
Money?
Money, yes, sir. $1,000 reward.
Oh. I'd almost forgotten about that. Well, Miss Wong, let's send that money to Mr. and Mrs. Temple's daughter.
Mr. and Mrs. Temple? Oh, the elderly people who were at hotel a few days ago?
Yes.
Yes.
Their son-in-law was killed by the professor.
Oh, sad.
Their daughter could make good use of that money.
Yes, would be very nice, Mr. Paladin.
Thank you.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy and Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun, Will Travel by Mr. Paris. Featured in the cast were Ralph Moody, Barney Phillips, Harry Bartell, Olin Soleil, and Lorene Tuttle. This is Hugh Douglas, inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel, on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from October 25th, 1959. Tom Hanley directed the sound effects. He was the Foley artist for that broadcast, having a wealth of experience prior to this series on the CBS program Gunsmoke, and also radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. In many ways, an unsung player from radio's past. You're listening to an hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for The Six Shooter, starring movie actor James Stewart, in an NBC broadcast from November 15, 1953.
In just a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as The Six Shooter, only one of the many fine programs brought to you Sundays on NBC. Each Sunday, listen to the music of the NBC Symphony Orchestra broadcasting from Carnegie Hall. Hear the amusing adventures of Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy in The Marriage. And tune to the NBC Star Playhouse for the nation's greatest stars. It's a lineup of wonderful programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman, who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends. Now, in just a moment, immediately following this important announcement, you'll hear Act One of The Six Shooter. A Christmas gift with a future. That's how everyone feels about a gift of United States savings bonds. Because when those bonds mature, they pay back $4 for every $3 invested. What's more, they can be held as long as 10 years beyond maturity and earn even further interest. Give a gift of United States savings bonds. Now, Act One of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart.
I hadn't expected to stay over in Smoke Falls, but when I stopped off to see old Dad Somerset and found him all crippled up with lumbago, well, of course, he didn't ask me to look after his stock, but I could see he sure wanted me to, so... Well, a couple of weeks later, he began feeling better, so I started thinking about moving on. It was nearly 5 o'clock in the afternoon that day. The sun just spilled over the top of Eagle Mountain when the buckboard pulled into the yard.
Mr. Ponsett?
Oh, evening, ma'am.
Mr. Ponsett, I'm Grace Proudley.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Miss Proudley.
I've been meaning to come out and see how Mr. Somerset's been getting along, but I just never have him in his free time. It's canning season, you know.
Yes, ma'am. Well, Dad's feeling much better. If you'd like to talk to him,
No, just say that I asked for him. As a matter of fact, it's you I want to talk to, Mr. Ponset.
Oh?
You see, I'm president of the Ladies' Aid Society of Smoke Falls.
Uh-huh.
We're affiliated with the church and do lots of charity work, Christmas baskets and things like that, you know. All the best ladies in town are members, and we don't just take in everybody.
Now, this is
what I'm getting at, Mr. Pomson. Tonight's our box supper and square dance. It's an annual event. Mr. Simpling always loans us his barn for the occasion. I've spent the whole afternoon helping with the decorations. Now, Polly Sullivan, that's Wade Sullivan's wife, she's chairman of the decorating committee, but since I'm president, I felt it was my duty to give her a hand. That's what made me so late coming out here to ask you.
To ask me?
About attending the supper.
Oh.
No,
well,
I'm not going to take no for an answer.
Oh, but Miss Proudley.
To tell you the truth, I've already told folks you were planning to come.
Oh, but you shouldn't have done that.
Now, after all, you're practically the first celebrity we've ever had in Smoke Falls. The auction starts at 7:30. You won't be late, will you, Mr. Pomson?
Oh, but
And
Ms.
one more thing, would you mind wearing your gun? The men folks are especially interested in that. Get up, Sheba. Come on, someone.
Oh, but wait a
minute. 7:30!
Wait a minute, Miss Proudley. Say there, Miss Proudley. Oh, dear. Well, after I gave Dad his supper, I washed my face and wet down my hair and started off for Old Man Simpling's barn. When I got there, Miss Proudley met me at the door and introduced me around. The only name that sank in was her daughter, Ellen. Pretty girl. I figured that when the box supper she'd packed was put up for sale, the bidding would be mighty serious.
All right, everybody, we're ready to begin the auction. We don't want the music now, Wilbur. Wilbur! Now just gather around the table here so you can get a good look at what you're buying. But remember, you can't judge a book by its cover. Now, which one shall we start with? Oh, my, look at this one. Pretty pink ribbon and white tissue paper. Why, I'll just bet you there's a whole fried chicken inside this box. Now, who's going to make the first bid? $1.50. Don't forget, gentlemen, a pretty lady's company goes with the supper.
I'll give a nickel.
Now, Spud Hooker, you stop joshing. You know we don't take any bid less than a quarter.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, who'll offer a quarter just to get things underway? Look at this lovely box. Just think some nice young lady spent the whole day fixing it up.
Then she'll be too tired to dance.
Come on, somebody. 25 cents. Why, it costs more than that.
The auction was kind of slow in picking up momentum. But when Mrs. Proudley started in to make the third sale, well, there wasn't much doubt whose supper she was selling. Ellen Proudley sort of reddened in the cheeks and tried to look unconcerned. I saw her give somebody a glance on the other side of the room, almost like a signal. Couldn't tell who it was intended for, but there were two fellas standing over there. Spud Hooker is one, tall, husky, about 25. He'd been cracking jokes and acting sort of like he owned the place. The other boy was kind of a different sort. He's thinner, shorter. He hadn't opened his mouth since I got there.
I don't know. Now, let's see if you can't do a little better this time, gentlemen. Here's the next supper.
Oh, boy.
My, it looks familiar. Oh, I guess I shouldn't have said anything, should I? Ellen will just about murder me when I get home. Oh! Well, as long as the cat's out of the bag, I might as well go ahead with the sale.
50 cents.
Bud Hooker bids 50 cents. A supper like this ought to be worth more than half a dollar. A little bird told me there's a chocolate cake inside.
75 cents, ma'am.
I've got 75. Now, what about a Spud? You're not going to let Tom Leverett outbid you?
$1.
$1. I'm bid. One silver dollar. Who'll give $1.25?
$1.25.
Don't forget, gentlemen, it's all for charity.
$1.50.
Now we're getting somewhere. I'm bid $1.50. Bud Hooker offers $1.50. Are there any more bids?
$2.
You're bidding $2, Tom?
Yes, ma'am.
$3.
Oh, three?
That's what I said.
Well, now, we all appreciate your enthusiasm, boys. But remember, this isn't the only supper you can buy.
It's so the only one I'm buying, and I'll take it right...
$4.
Huh?
Well, all right. Going once, going twice, and it's sold.
$5.
Now, Spud, are
I'll
you sure...
I'll $6, Miss Proudly.
You're making a fool of yourself, Leverett. Ellen wants to eat with me.
My bid's $6.
$7.
Now, boys...
$10.
Oh, now, you don't mean that, Tom. You can't afford $10.
No, I mean it.
Well, all right. I'm bid $10. Are there any more bids? Going once, going twice.
Go ahead, sell it to him. It ain't going to do him no good.
Now, we don't want any trouble, Spud.
Ellen's my girl, and she's eating with me.
I'll take that box, Miss Proudly. Here's your money.
Didn't you hear what I said? She's eating with me.
Get out of the way, Spud.
You're not man enough to make me move. Now, give me that box, or I'll take it away from you. Okay, Tom, you hurt me.
Hold on there. No. Just a minute here. Now, hold on.
It don't concern you, Ponson.
No, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't concern me. It just seems to me that there ought to be a better place for settling things. That's all. Mr. Ponsett's right, Spud. Let's go out.
Hey, where's Britt Ponsett? Dad Somerset said he was over here.
Yeah, I'm Ponsett.
Mr. Ponsett, Sheriff Tinsmith told me to find you.
What's the matter, Jake?
Dink Falk just broke out of jail.
Oh.
Yes. He shot the sheriff in the back while he was getting away.
Oh, he did.
Hey, well, we took him over to Doc Foster's, and he's bleeding pretty bad. He wants to talk to Mr. Ponsett before he...
I'll get my horse.
Glad you got here, Britt, before...
Now, what are you talking about, Ray? You're going to be all right. The doc says you'll be back on your feet again inside of a week or so.
Don't know what I was thinking of. Letting Dink Falk get hold of my gun while I was serving the supper. Must be getting careless in my old age.
Now, well, you're not the first man to have trouble with Falk. He had a pretty fancy reputation, from what I hear.
Yeah, that's why I had to see you, Britt. My fault he got loose, and I don't want other folks to pay for my mistakes.
Well, what do you mean?
I know this town, Britt. I'll get a posse together and start after Falk.
Well, that's...
And they'll catch him, too. But going out in a crowd like that, he'll hear him coming. Falk's a wildcat killer, Britt. When he's cornered, he won't give up. Pick off three or four of the posse before they can close in.
Well, not if they're careful.
That's the trouble, though. Fellas here ain't cautious. They're bullheaded. But you'd know how to take him, Britt. No, I ain't saying it's your duty. You don't even live in Smoke Falls, but you could capture Falk without him having a chance to...
No, I'm afraid you're giving me too much credit, Ray.
If you want somebody to go along, any of the boys...
Sure, I know that,
I'd be mighty grateful, Britt. The folks here have been good to me. Wouldn't like to leave them thinking that because of me, because of what I did, some of them was going to...
No, you better take it easy.
I know, it's asking a lot. Falk's a good shot, and a wildcat killer. It's asking...
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment. Recently, the American Red Cross was called on for immediate and dramatic expansion of its part in the National Blood Program, was asked to make available all the gamma globulin possible for the prevention of paralysis from polio. Experiments conducted over the past 2 years have demonstrated the effectiveness of this treatment. It takes approximately 1 pint of blood to make an average dose of gamma globulin as used for polio. And one injection protects a child for a period of 1 to 5 weeks. Therefore, there is a tremendous need for blood donations now. so that we may be able to do our utmost to safeguard our children during the epidemic period next summer. At the same time, there has been no let-up in the need for blood for use overseas and for the thousands of wounded men in our military hospitals who are still fighting for a chance to live. If you are an adult, call your local Red Cross chapter right away. Get an appointment to make a donation of your blood for the National Blood Program, which aims to supply the total blood needs of the country. Join the thousands of Americans who are rolling up their sleeves. Take pride in having helped save a life. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Sheriff Tin Smith had been right about the town foreman of posse. Hadn't lost any time. Spud Hooker was taking charge. I was kind of surprised to see that Tom Leverett was along. But I figured he and Hooker sort of joined forces for the time being.
How is he, Ponsett?
Well, he passed out a few minutes ago. Maybe it's just as well. At least he's getting some rest.
Yeah, well, we're going after Fault. The other boys are waiting behind the mercantile.
Uh-huh. Looks like you got caught a gang.
I ain't got no objections to having you go along, too. Not that we need you, you understand?
Yeah.
Well, you coming?
Well, I had a little talk with the sheriff just before he lost consciousness. He seemed to think that taking out a posse after Falk wasn't such a good idea.
What's he want us to do, let him go scot-free?
No. No, Sheriff Tin Smith sort of suggested maybe one or two men would have a better chance of catching him. They can make faster time, maybe sneak up on Falk unaware.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it's okay with me. You going to be one of the boys who goes after him, Ponsett?
Well, I haven't exactly made up my mind.
You better make it up fast or I'll take somebody else.
Oh, I see, Well, in that case, I... Whoa. Say, your name's Leverett, isn't it?
That's right, Mr. Ponsett. Tom Leverett.
Mm-hmm. You want to ride along with me?
Why, sure.
Wait a minute here. I thought you said one or two men.
Mm-hmm, I did.
Well, we don't need Leverett, then.
Well, I tell you, I sort of figured maybe you ought to stay in town, Hooker. So if Tom and I get into trouble, well, you could bring the posse out later.
You're trying to make a fool out of me, Ponsett?
No, I'm not.
Everybody knows I'm twice the man Leverett is. I can ride better and shoot faster and outfight him 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
You want the credit for catching Falk yourself, don't you? Well, it ain't going to work out that way. Come on, boy. I'll find Falk myself and I'll bring him in alone. That's all right.
Hey! Well, Tom, let's go, huh? Falk's trail headed west, up toward Eagle Mountain. And the moon was out, sort of a half moon, but it gave us enough light so we could follow the hoof prints Falk's horse had left. Along about midnight, we spotted another trail, fresher. It couldn't have been more than a couple of minutes old. It cut in from one side and then went on ahead in the same direction Falk was riding. You see that, Tom?
Yeah. Looks like Spud Hooker took a shortcut.
Yeah.
You reckon he'll beat us to him?
Oh, you never know. Never know. If he does, he might save us some grief, wouldn't he, huh?
You're not anxious to tangle with Falk, are you, Mr. Ponsett?
No. No, I'm not anxious to tangle with anybody, Tom.
But I thought... Well, you brought in other outlaws before.
Oh, some. Not as many as folks think, but I've never enjoyed tangling with any of them.
Why'd you pick me? Spud's right. He is twice the man I am.
That's shooting, maybe, yeah. But there's more to trailing a killer than being able to shoot. You know, lots of times it's more important for a man to know when not to shoot, you know.
Huh?
Yeah. Fellow's itching to pull a trigger like Spud. Well, he's apt to
pull it too soon. And, hey, look at that. The moon's going down.
Yeah.
We might as well get some shut-eye. Whoa, boy. Oscar. You couldn't see the trail anyway.
Spud won't be stopping for sleep.
No, I don't suppose he will. That's another reason I picked you. I kind of figured he'd want to keep pushing on all night. Doggone it, guy, along about this time, I just get tired. As soon as the morning sun began gray in the sky, we started off again. Falk's trail was winding up the side of Eagle Mountain now. It was a pretty hard ride. Tom didn't complain, even though I could see he wasn't used to it. Every once in a while, he almost slid out of his saddle, but somehow he managed to hang on. About noon, we reached Little Creek, and Falk's trail gave out. The other trail, the one we figured was Hooker's, it sort of milled around in all directions and then went off on a tangent. And we climbed out from our horses and got a drink of water. It tastes good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
You ever been out this way before, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Not for the last couple of years, though.
Mm-hmm. Any cabins around, place a man could hide out?
Well, not that I remember. You think we're getting close to him?
Well, he could have gone on using the creek to cover his trail, but he'd have to stop pretty soon.
Oh?
Oh, yeah. A man can't keep riding forever, even Dink Falk. So far, we haven't seen any signs that he made camp, you see.
That's so. Giant Cave.
Hmm?
He might be there, Britt. It's not more than a mile away due south.
Giant Cave,
huh? You've heard of it, ain't you?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, it'd be a perfect spot for a man to hold up. Nobody knows for certain just how far back into the mountain the cave really goes. Some scientific fellows tried to explore it last summer, but, well, their lanterns gave out before they come to the end.
Well, it sounds like something we ought to see even if Falk isn't there. Come on, let's go and have a look.
That's the entrance there, Britt, beside that slab of yellow rock.
Uh-huh.
I don't see any sign of Falk's trail. I guess he could have come up from the other side, don't
you? Yeah, that's what he must have done.
Huh?
That pony over yonder. That clump of bushes grazing.
Oh, yeah, I see him.
Easy, Sorrel. Scott. Easy, whoa, boy.
You know, Jake Watson said Falk stole a sorrel when he made his getaway.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'd better close in on foot. We tethered our horses on a couple of spruce saplings, moved into the cave entrance. It wasn't a very big hole. We had to sort of bend over and crawl through it. But the room on the other side, that must have been 100 feet long, 50 feet wide. The walls were sheer rock, sort of rainbow-colored, so smooth you'd have thought somebody had been polishing them. And then the light behind us got down to a pinpoint.
He wouldn't be hiding here in the dark, would he, Britt?
Maybe. He heard us coming.
Somebody up ahead.
Yeah. You got your gun ready?
Uh-huh.
Now, don't use it unless you're pretty sure of hitting something. If we start shooting, it'll just help his aim.
Okay.
All right, now back up against the wall here behind you.
Falk! We know you're in here, Falk. You go any further, you'll get lost. You'll never find your way out. Hey, you hear me, Falk? You're wasting lead. You can't see us. We know that.
You can't see me neither.
But we don't have to. You've got to come out sooner or later, and we'll be waiting. All right, we're going to leave you now, Falk. We're going outside and wait.
remain where you are.
You giving up?
No, I ain't. And I ain't alone.
What?
I got somebody with me. Friend of yours, I reckon. We're coming out together. And if you try to stop me, I'll kill him.
What's he talking about?
He ain't lying, Brett. It's me, Spud Hooker.
Spud?
I caught up with him last night, but he got the draw on me. Hold your fire, Brett. He means what he says. He'll kill me if you don't hold your fire. You gotta do what he told you, Brett. You gotta.
All right, Bob, come on.
Start packing up towards the entrance. I don't hear you moving.
Brett, please.
All right, let's go, Tom. We backed out into the daylight, Tom and me, and waited for them. About a minute later, Spud Hooker marched through the mouth of the cave, half scared to death. Dink Falk was right behind him, holding a .45 aimed at the small of Spud's back. I was pretty sure he wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger, either. Sheriff Tinsmith was right. He's just a wildcat killer. He had that stampede look in his eyes as he stood there blinking against the sun. Same kind of a look you see in a steer when the herd's shoving him along. You can't stop or be trampled to death.
Hang off your guns, both of you. Take them off or I'll fix your friend here.
Falk gave Spud a shove with his gun and he jumped forward. There was an opening now between him and Falk. The next thing I knew, Tom dived forward.
Get down, Spud!
Tom tackled Spud and he rolled over. The bullet missed him, but Tom was in range and he took it. Falk aimed to fire again and I managed to get my gun out. Bullet hit his thigh and spun him around. Then his leg buckled and he fell face down. He hadn't let go of the pistol yet. He started to bring it up. Drop it, Falk! For a second, his finger went right on squeezing the trigger, but nah, he just didn't have the strength. Tom? Tom, you all right?
Sure. Yeah, it's hardly bleeding.
I should have let Falk alone. I should have let you handle him, Britt.
Well, I don't know. Looks to me like Tom did most of the handling around here. I mean, if it hadn't been for him, you know.
I guess I had you figured wrong, Tom. I never thought you'd be the one to save me, but...
I wasn't saving you, Spud.
Huh?
I don't like you. I never did. And nothing's gonna change that.
Then why?
I like Ellen. I like her a lot. Well, she's in love with you. If you got yourself killed, it would just hurt her and wouldn't do me no good.
Ellen tell you she's in love with me?
She didn't have to.
When she finds out what happened today...
She ain't gonna find out.
I'm gonna tell her. I'm gonna tell her myself.
I don't want her to know.
It's for me to decide.
Now listen here, Spud Hooker.
You do the listening for a change.
No,
I thought
you
I taught you a lesson last night, but it looks like...
Now, hold on. Now, I think we ought to get Tom to a doctor, don't you? If we don't, Ellen won't have no way of choosing him, even if she wanted to. Now, come on, Spud. Come on, give me a hand. Now, we tied Falk onto the back of his pony and started off for town. I sure didn't know what Ellen was going to do about Spud and Tom. Oh, you never know what a woman's going to do when it comes to, you know, falling in love and marrying and all that sort of thing. But I did know one thing. That picking Tom to go along with me, that had been a pretty good choice. Ellen probably could do a whole lot worse, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, the tradition of religious freedom and of religious worship in America goes back to the very founding of our country. So, in these days of world crisis, when our nation and all its citizens need spiritual strength and guidance, all of us should think again of what religion means to us and to our country. For it's religious faith that makes our way of life possible. During November, people of many faiths are joining in a great Religion in American Life campaign. So, whatever your faith may be, you are asked to join in this campaign. Be sure to attend and support the church or synagogue of your choice. And if you have children, by all means, light their life with faith. Bring them to worship this week. The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt, and the transcribed story is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture Thunder Bay. Others in the cast were Jeanette Nolan, Frank Gerstle, Robert Griffin, Forrest Lewis, and Sam Edwards. Special music for this program was by Basil Adler, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And incidentally, a great many of our friends have written in to thank us for putting the Six Shooter on the air. And a surprising number of letters have requested the name of the theme you are listening to right now and where it might be obtained. Well, we're sorry, but it is music that has been recorded exclusively for broadcast and is therefore not available for home use. But we are grateful nonetheless to all of you who have written. Your kind letters are always welcome. This is Hal Gibney speaking. Tonight, hear Celeste Holm in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
The Six Shooter on Tuned 2 yesterday from November 15, 1953 on NBC. Bringing to a close this hour of Westerns on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.